Abraham faces a test at the end. I wonder if you can remember back to any tests that you've taken in the past. I'm sure it's not as extreme as Abraham's, but we've all taken tests, haven't we? You maybe remember taking tests at school, or maybe you've entered a competition where you've been judged, or maybe you remember your first driving test. It can have different reactions to tests, can't you? There can be a time of excitement, exhilaration. This is my chance to prove to others that I can do this, prove to myself that I can do this. But often I think we feel nervous and anxious about tests. So how am I going to perform? Am I going to do my best? I can remember back to my first driving test. I was so nervous and anxious. My first driving test. Yes, there's more than one. My first driving test didn't go well. I was so anxious and nervous that I barely got out of second and I crawled around about 10 miles an hour. So I failed for making undue progress. Can you believe that? I don't know. That wasn't a great experience. But online, I've read other people taking their driving tests, and they've got worse stories than I have. So I think the award for the worst driving test has got to go to a Mrs. Park from Guildford. She turned up for her fifth driving test. I passed on my second, by the way. She turned up for her fifth driving test. She thought she was going to do well this time. She thought she's done the lesson, she's going to do well this time. Unfortunately, as soon as she left the test centre, she drove into the River Wye. Not great. To be fair, she knew she'd failed straight away. So a close second comes to a Mrs. Ireland, who didn't actually leave the car park. She drove straight into the test centre building, which is, again, she knew she'd probably failed that. One person said that they were so nervous that they'd forgotten where they'd parked the car. Another person said that they failed because they tried to put the examiner's knee into reverse. And one person said, I would have passed if that bee hadn't flown through the car window as I was trying to park. I tried to swat the bee away, but unfortunately I drove into the car behind me. She goes on to say, I tried to explain to the examiner, but he said he'd never seen the bee. And then my favourite is this one. The test was going well until I pulled up behind a line of cars and waited for the traffic to move. You know it already. We sat there for a few minutes before the examiner told me I could pull around the parked cars. Fantastic. I think most of us don't like being tested. We do feel anxious when someone else judges us. And as I said in our second reading, God tests Abraham with a very extreme test that hopefully none of us is going to face. That passage raises lots of questions. Why did God set that particular test? And another question for me is, why did Abraham obey that test? And I think to understand, you do need to look back in all the chapters before, and particularly the chapters that relate to Abraham. So if you've been here the last couple of weeks, we've been looking at characters from the Old Testament. 2 weeks ago, we looked at Adam and Eve, and then last week, Peter preached on Noah. Each time, it's sort of a new beginning, clearly a new beginning when Adam and Eve is made. It's the start of the human race, the whole of creation. It's sort of a new beginning when Noah is the only person in his family saved in the ark. And so it's sort of a new beginning. God is resetting the clock. But it hasn't worked. Man is still sinning, and sin is still a natural inclination. In chapter 12, as Pat read to us, there's another new beginning. This time it's a different type of new beginning. God is not going to judge the world this time. He's going to save the world. And he's going to start his great, fantastic story of salvation through this one person, Abraham. So 4,000 years ago, God spoke to Abraham. Abraham, as you probably know, is known as a man of faith. And that faith was accredited to him as righteous. But his faith wasn't static. His faith fluctuates over the years he walks with God. And in this sermon, I want to look at sort of three different stages, how Abraham's faith develops over that time. So the first bit is faith to follow God. God first appeared to Abraham when he was 75 years old. Up to that point, Abraham hasn't known this God. He's probably worshipped foreign gods. He's probably worshipped the moon. He came from Ur originally, and they had a cult that worshipped the moon. But then God, who created the moon, speaks to Abraham. He tells Abraham to leave where he is and go to a land that he will show him. God makes Abraham an offer. And at that time and subsequently, he makes three very clear promises to Abraham. First, he promises to make Abraham into a great nation. Secondly, God promises that Abraham's descendants will inherit the land he's going to show him. And then thirdly, God promises that through Abraham, God is going to bless all nations. Three fantastic promises. And they sort of echo, don't they, what happened in the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve were told to be fruitful and multiply. And Abraham hasn't had any children to this point, but now he's told he will become a mighty nation. God had given Adam and Eve the Garden of Eden and everything in it. God now promises to give Abraham the promised land. God gave Adam and Eve a job description. This time, God gives Abraham a job description to be a blessing to all nations. What does Abraham need to do to claim these three fantastic promises? Are there lots of conditions? Are there lots of rules that he has to obey? No. The only thing he has to do is to go. He has to leave where he is and follow God. That's the only condition. There are no other commandments, no other requirements. The promises are not conditional on Abraham's obedience. All he has to do is follow God. God basically says, come, follow me. There was a cost involved. Abraham did have to leave his family and his land where he was, and that would have been difficult. But God promises to give back so much more in return. So he's told to leave his father's family, but he's told he will become a great nation. He's told to leave the land where he is, but he's given the promised land. He's told to leave his father's household. I think that might have been the hardest thing for Abraham to do. It was the son's responsibility to look after the father in old age, to be a blessing to your father. But here he's told to leave his father's household. He'd had to give up being a blessing to his immediate family. But God promises that through him he will be a blessing to all nations. There is a cost associated with following God, but the benefits just outweigh the costs. God offers so much more in return. But they're not easy promises to take, are they? Again, Abraham would have needed faith, I think, to set out on this journey. Each of those promises seem impossible to fulfill. God's promised Abraham that he's going to be a great nation. He hasn't born a single son yet. Abraham promises that he's going to get the promised land. Abraham doesn't own a single piece of land, and the land he's taking him to is already occupied. There are cities, there are nations there already. But God is saying to one man, this will be yours. Finally, God promises Abraham that he's going to be a blessing to all the nations. I'm sure all the other nations didn't think it was going to be a blessing for them when Abraham moved in. God doesn't make any guarantees. God doesn't even do a single miracle to Abraham to prove that he can be relied on. All Abraham has to go on is God's word and God's promises. There was only one way that Abraham was going to find out if God was faithful, and that was to follow him. That was the only way he could test whether or not God was true to his word. These promises are fantastic, and God makes the same promises to us today, doesn't he? God offers us a new family, the family of God. God offers us a new home, the kingdom of God. And God promises to give us a new purpose, to be a blessing to others around us. And all we need to do to accept those promises is to follow Jesus, to follow God. Abraham was asked to make a choice, and he accepted that choice. God asks us to make the same choice. Are we going to follow him? The alternative is to reject God and to choose second best. I do like the phrase in the Bible which says, so Abram went. So Abram went. It was quite simple. God had made these promises, and despite the cost, despite the lack of assurances, Abram went. It was just too good an offer to refuse. As I've reread the story of Abraham, I've thought to myself, why did God choose Abraham? Is there anything special about Abraham that made God choose him? And the answer's got to be no. If you read the chapters in between the ones that were read to us, you'll see that Abraham is quite a nasty piece of work, really. He's not the greatest man. He's not very righteous. He's prepared to lie. So he often lies to people that Sarah, his wife, is his sister, in order purely to protect himself. He doesn't just do that once. He does that time and time again, just to save his own skin. Never mind that Sarah is taken into Pharaoh's harem. Never mind that Sarah's put at risk. He lies to get his own way, to protect himself. Abraham is someone who's willing to use others for his own benefit. He takes Hagar, Sarah's servant, as his wife, so that she can just purely bear him a son. When things become difficult between Hagar and Sarah, they're rejected. Hagar and her son Ishmael are thrown out into the wilderness. They would have died out there of thirst and hunger had God not intervened. Abraham doesn't do that just once, he does it twice. He's quite happy just to use people and then abandon people. Abraham is our father of faith, but he's not a particularly nice person. You might think I'm being harsh, that those are different times, this is 4,000 years ago, but even Pharaoh comes out better than Abraham. Even Pharaoh is shocked by Abraham's behaviour. Compared to Abraham, Pharaoh looks good. So God didn't choose Abraham because he was perfect or righteous or particularly pleasant. The only thing that makes Abraham stand out, I think, was that he was desperate. All of these promises depend on Abraham having a son. There was no son, there were no children. Abraham is 75 years old. He is desperate to have a son. His family name, his family is about to die out unless God does something. Abraham and Sarah would have longed for a child. They married young, they would have wanted a son all their life. But now they're both old. Sarah is barren. They've given up hope in a sense. This is their last hope of having a family. This is the last chance of their dreams coming true. And I think it's that desperation, that helplessness that God sees. And I think it's why Abraham responds. Not because he's righteous or because he's fantastic. He's just desperate. This is his last chance to fulfill his dreams. God is offering a new hope, a new beginning for Abraham and Sarah. And that's why they accept, I think. I don't know about you, but I find that deeply reassuring because I know I'm not perfect and I know that I need Jesus to save me, to give me that hope and a future. So Abraham and Sarah, they do follow. They take up the challenge and they do follow God into the promised land. They don't know where it is at the moment, but they go. That's the first stage, the faith to follow God. The second stage, I think, is a whole series of chapters between the two that were read to us. And this is the faith to persist with God, the faith to go on with God, even when times are difficult, even when things are not working out as expected. I think it's interesting, God doesn't give a timeline. I gave you a timeline for when we might appoint a vicar. God did not give a timeline to Abraham and Sarah. He didn't say when this would happen. Now, I don't know about you, but if God appeared to me when I'm 75 years old and says I'm going to have another son, I think, whoa, not sure I want that, but I would definitely think, well, it's got to happen soon. Now, I'm 75 years old, my wife is not getting any younger, this has got to happen fairly soon if it's going to happen at all, it's late already. Abraham and Sarah have to wait another 25 years before Isaac is born. Can you imagine that? 25 years from the promise to being Isaac being born. It's just incredible. That must have affected Abraham and Sarah during those 25 years. They would have told people that God had appeared to them. They would have told people, God's promised us a son. We're going to have a son. We're going to leave where we are. We're going to leave the family home. We're going to go to a place we don't know, but God has promised us a son. Okay, it doesn't happen straight away. Maybe it will happen when we get to the promised land. But they get there and nothing happens. Months turn into years and nothing happens. They're in the promised land, but there's no son. To make matters worse, when they get to the promised land, there's a famine. They have to leave the promised land to go to Egypt. yeah, God has made all these fantastic promises. It doesn't look particularly great, does it? There's no sun, and they're having to leave the land that God has taken them to. You know, what price God's promise is now? Other people must have been laughing, surely. Yeah. Where's your God now? Why have you given up so much for nothing? I wonder what you would do in that situation. For me, I think I would go back to the promises. Did God really say that? Did God really promise that? I'd begin to rationalise. I'd begin to say, well, God isn't doing very much here. I'd begin to think, what do I have to do? Do I have to help God to fulfil the promises? And that is exactly what Abraham and Sarah do. First of all, they try adoption. Abraham says he's going to let one of his servants become his heir. But God says, no, it's going to be one of your biological sons that's the promised son. They try another ploy. They try surrogacy. Abraham takes Hagar and produces Ishmael. God again says, no, that's not the way to go. But that is not until Ishmael is 13 years old. Abraham thinks Ishmael is the promised son. For 13 years, he's invested all of his hopes, his ambitions, all of the promises in Ishmael. And it's only when he's on the verge of adulthood that God says, no, this promised son is going to come through Sarah. That's the first time God has said that. I can't imagine what they must have felt. They've waited all that time, and God hasn't even started to fulfill his promises. I think I might have been tempted to give up. They thought they were helping God to fulfill his promises. In fact, they were just adding additional problems. It's at that point that Sarah conceives. At long last, the promised son is coming. Abraham's faith was sorely tested. They did learn that God could be trusted. God doesn't act according to human expectations. God doesn't act according to human timescales. God acts according to his own ways. God can be trusted. It's fantastic news. God has left it not just late. God has left it very late to prove that he is the one who will fulfill his promises. There is one final twist to the story, and that's the chapter that was read to us at the end. Abraham has demonstrated his faith to follow God. He's demonstrated his faith to persist with God. There's one final test. He's got to face the test. Is his faith strong enough to submit everything to God? God commands Abraham to kill his son Isaac. After everything they've been through, all the waiting, 25 years and more, God commands Abraham to kill Isaac. Isaac is still a boy. Maybe he's 5, 6 years old. He's commanded to kill him. The question is, will Abraham have enough faith to submit to this ultimate test? The old Abraham, I don't think, would have passed the test. He would have made excuses. He would have rationalized why God wasn't literally telling him to kill Isaac. He would have argued with God, I think. He doesn't do any of those things. Abraham argues with God about Lot, but he doesn't argue about his own son. At any point prior to that reading, I think Abraham would have failed the test. The only reason he passes the test is because he's gone through that 30-year period of testing, of seeing that God is faithful. And this is a massive thing that God is asking. He's not just asking Abraham to kill his son Isaac. If you think about it, all the promises of God depend on Isaac. God is asking Abraham not just to kill Isaac, but to kill all of his hopes and dreams for the future. Are you prepared to sacrifice everything for me? Are you prepared to sacrifice the very promises that made you follow me in the first place? That is just an amazing thing, I think. I think God is saying, are you prepared to follow me, not for what you get out of it, but because you love me? Are you prepared to trust me with your own son, with all your hopes, with all the promises I've given you? Do you trust me that much? Do you love me that much? Abraham obeys. He probably gets the vision, or God speaks to him in the night, and early next morning he leaves. I'm not surprised it's early in the morning. That conversation with Sarah can wait a bit longer. We won't wake Sarah up. We'll leave straight away with Isaac. And he takes Isaac up the mountain, and he's prepared to sacrifice Isaac. As Abraham raises the knife to slay his son, God says, stop. It's an amazing story, isn't it? Abraham has passed the test. If my sons are listening to this sermon online, I'm not sure that I would pass the test. They might be pleased to hear that. But I don't think Abraham would have passed the test any point up to that point. It was only because of everything he'd gone through that he's able to completely and fully trust God with everything. It's a horrific test in many ways, isn't it? Sacrificing your own child. I do think God was teaching that we're not to practice child sacrifice, which is good. But I'm not sure Abraham knew that at the time. It's a horrific test. But I do think that God confronts each one of us with a similar test. Do we follow Jesus because of what we can get out of it? Or do we follow Jesus because he's the only one? Because we love him? Are we prepared to give up everything to follow Christ? I do think that's the most challenging question any of us can face. And I suspect one day we will be asked to answer that question. Are we prepared to give up everything to follow Jesus? I don't know about you, but I am still on the journey. God promised Abraham a family, a home, and a purpose. But he wanted to give him even more than that. What he wanted to give Abraham was himself. It was his relationship with God that was the most important. And that's what he wants to give to each one of us. He wants to give himself fully, completely, wholly to us. And in return, we give ourselves wholly, fully, completely to God. Abraham's story is a fantastic story. It's an encouraging story because it focuses on God. But it's a challenging story, isn't it? Are we prepared to follow God, even if we don't have guarantees? Are we prepared to persist with God, even though we have doubts and we don't know what God is doing? And at the end of our life, will we be prepared to sacrifice everything to keep going with God? Each of us is in a different part of that journey, but the destination is the same. The destination is to know God fully and to love him. Amen.